it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Good morning, Birdland. I'm Mark Brown. I've been covering the Orioles for more than a decade on CamdenChat.com and hosting this podcast for 113 episodes and counting. It is now April the 29th, 2024. No one is in a good mood in Birdland after a disappointing weekend series against the Athletics that saw closer Craig Kimbrel blow saves on both Friday night and Sunday afternoon, leading to Orioles losses in each of those games. Even after this weekend setback, the Orioles are on pace for a 102-win season. I'm still taking the under. I'm sorry. The Orioles lost a game in the standings to the Yankees over the weekend. They had been tied in games back and actually leading by percentage points. The Yankees were able to take two out of three games from the Brewers, including a 15-run offensive explosion on Sunday afternoon. So the Orioles will enter the four-game set that starts today with a one-game deficit on their rival and possibly with a potentially dangerous Yankees lineup. The danger was always there. It was a question of if they'd all be healthy at the same time, I guess. And so far they are. So, yeah, they're going to have a one-game deficit on their division rival. Four-game set starting today, pretty crucial. In today's episode, we're mostly going to be in rant mode because it was really awfully frustrating to see the bullpen, Kimbrel mostly, but not only, blow the two games to Oakland that the Orioles lost over the weekend. So let's just go in reverse order. I'm going to try and talk through everything, see if I can talk myself out of panicking, and maybe in the process talk you out of panicking as well. Sunday's game, I think we all knew it. Well, we were all dreading it just from what happened on Friday. Was Kimbrel going to look better on the Sunday? And if you were primed for that, which I certainly was, it was clear from the first pitch that Kimbrel didn't have it. He missed by a lot and ultimately ended up having the mound visit during the second at-bat because manager Brandon Hyde said he noticed awkward striding around from Kimbrel, and he said after the game that Kimbrel reported that he was okay. The result of that at-bat was that Kimbrel was not able to put away the number 9 hitter and backup catcher Kyle McCann for Oakland, who on the 9th pitch of that at-bat hit the game's go-ahead homer. Kimbrel, after one more ball out of the strike zone, was removed one pitch into the next at-bat. He was said after the game to have upper back tightness, which, as a person who just went through my mid-30s and then late-30s, I can certainly say, as many of you probably can, yes, upper back tightness, that's going to happen a lot. Sometimes it just happens because you sleep funny, whatever, who knows. Kimbrel, his 36th birthday is late May, so he's definitely old enough to experience that, even though he is much more fit than us as a professional athlete. The older baseball players are not immune from these kinds of problems. So I don't know. I don't know how much that was his problem or what. I don't know what it's going to take for him to get better. But it's not going to be good for the Orioles if Kimbrel is coming in and trying to pitch hurt and if this is how he looks. And so given that, Hyde ultimately decided to trust what Kimbrel said. It made me think really back to when Brandon Hyde was hired, like his very first press conference, and pretty much every question that the Orioles reporters there at that time asked him was something, Well, he ended up answering it with talking about how his way of being a manager in that situation was going to stress the importance of building relationships with the players and communicating with the players and being honest with the players. And I tell you what, I distinctly remember, even though that was now like 5.5 years ago, just kind of scoffing at what seemed like a boilerplate answer. But I think that's maybe a real reason why Brandon Hyde was able to outlast the tanking era, the rebuild era, whatever, and make it through to when the Orioles were good again. I think he actually was pretty good at being honest with the players in the clubhouse and keeping them all just understanding what the situation is and able to put on their best, even if they were maybe privately a little grumpy about their role or whatever. I think he managed very good situations with kind of veterans who've started to get displaced as the rebuilding gave way to better baseball in 2022 and 2023, certainly. I mean, really, the only kind of bad thing that's happened in his tenure is when Chris Davis tried to get in a fight with him in the dugout. And I've always blamed Davis on that and not really anything to do with Hyde. Having said all that, it seems like maybe Hyde still has a little bit of work to do on getting the relationship with Kimbrel so that he can get some honest answers from Kimbrel about when he can and cannot go. Because there's no shame if Kimbrel needs an extra day off. And hopefully Hyde is going to preemptively decide that and not, rather than not. But we're going to find out. Anyway, so that was Sunday. Friday, Kimbrel came in. Double to left field by Brent Rooker, who's probably Oakland's best hitter. Okay, whatever. Then issued a walk to J.J. Blade. Most of the pitches were not even close to the strike zone. Very frustrating. Blade does have a good eye, so whatever. But again, most of them were not even close. So it's not even like he made it a hard decision about whether or not to swing. That then led to a double hit by Abraham Toro that ended up scoring the tying run since it was a one-run game. This was a hard shot right at defensive replacement Ryan McKenna, added to the roster that day to be the defensive replacement outfielder guy. McKenna really biffed it, I think. I think he should have caught that ball. I think a guy whose job is defensive replacement in the late innings, you got to do it. He just had an awful jump. The StatCast reading on that was that he had a jump of minus 12.4 feet, which you maybe never even knew that you could actually have negatives of your jump number, which is reflected of going in the wrong direction before going in the right direction. So, you know, you can't have that happen. Why Ryan McKenna blew that, I don't know. Weirdly, there were a large number of Ryan McKenna defenders, both on Twitter and that rolled onto Camden Chat, who were like, it was really hard hit, which it was. It was 105.9 miles an hour. Certainly, I could not have made the play. But a guy whose job literally called up that day to make the job, he should do it. He should be able to do it. And the fact that he couldn't is just another reason for us to spend the rest of the year annoyed at Ryan McKenna, the same as last year's game number two, dropping the game-ending pop-up. It really was reminiscent of that because although that was McKenna's fault, it wasn't McKenna's fault that the pitcher couldn't recover after that. Of course, a year ago, Felix Bautista gave up the walk-off homer to, what was it, Adam Duvall on that occasion. On Friday night, Kimbrel then walked the next two batters, bottom of the Oakland lineup batters. And Oakland, again, their lineup is bad. So doing that was really bad. Kimbrel, whatever the reason, I don't know if he was already feeling the upper back tightness on Friday. I don't know if he was just worn out after a stretch of modestly heavy, not super heavy use over the last week or so. I don't know. But he got lifted. Keegan Aiken pulled off the tightrope act, carried it into the 10th inning. And then, of course, Colton Cowser had the missed cutoff man that probably allowed the Oakland go-ahead run to score. So, you know, there was some outfield chicanery that led to that Friday loss. If Kimbrel had done better on Sunday, we wouldn't still be panicking about Friday, but these two things taken in tandem, it's understandable to have some panic, I think. So I want to look at, there's a lot of narrative of, okay, Kimbrel is old, washed, he's tired, he wore down late last year. That's kind of the narrative that has stuck to him. And 1 year ago, Kimbrel pitched in 71 games. He threw 69 innings. His bad months of the season were May and August. He was pretty good in September. I think he was, well, he had a zero ERA in both the wild card and division series rounds to get the Phillies through those rounds into the NLCS. He did struggle once it hit the NLCS round. I don't know if that meant he was tired and then wore down once it got into mid-October. I don't know. What I do know is he maxed out at 13 innings thrown in a single calendar month last year. He did that on two occasions. So if Friday's outing and Sunday's outing had gone better, like if he just got the save, Kimbrel would then be at 13 innings pitched for a month for 2024. So I don't know. He's not used more than he was used last year, at least on a month-long basis. I don't know if you drill down to, like, he got four straight outings where he only got one day of rest in between the outings. I don't know if that's enough to tire him out. Maybe after like three kind of outings where he only has one day of rest in between, maybe he needs 2 days off, something like that. The Orioles have given him multiple days off after any time he's pitched in back-to-back games. So maybe they need to manage that better, and hopefully they can kind of work out a plan for that. I don't know, but Craig Kimbrel, he was great until this weekend, okay? Allowed a 339 OPS against for batters. And although he did have a blown save in his first appearance, that was some weird batted ball luck stuff. And the Orioles ended up winning that game anyway. And he had not allowed any extra base hits before Friday night. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think that looks like a guy who is washed and worn out. But I think he can... He could end up moving in the direction of worn out and washed if the Orioles are not able to be a little bit more careful about how they use him. Of course, that also is going to depend somewhat on how much there are other palatable options in the bullpen. And I will be right back after a message from a Fans First Sports Network sponsor, and then I'm going to dip into the mailbag for more about Kimbrel and what the Orioles will hopefully be able to find or add to get some more reliable options in the bullpen.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Okay, so into the mailbag we go. This one came from longtime listener James, who reacted to yesterday's Kimbrel outing, like most of us, trying to figure out what the heck happened and what to do about it. James, in his message, noted that with Kyle Bradish and John Means due back this week, the Orioles are going to have guys to push into the bullpen if they so choose. It seems to me, as I've talked about on this show, they're going to probably push two starters into the bullpen. So James was wondering what I think about whether the Orioles will do something differently now with the closer role. Specifically, he asked if I think Albert Suarez should become the closer, or whether I think Hyde is just going to rely on Kimbrel primarily and then play matchups only when Kimbrel is down. So anyone else out there, remember you can drop me a message at CamdenCastPod@gmail.com or show up on Camden Chat and get my attention in the comments where I go by the name EatMoreSK, and you can get your question or topic into the mailbag for a future episode. So James, thanks for listening. And thank you for the question as well. Kimbrel, he's been on my mind since Friday, or really because of how Kimbrel pitched on Friday. The idea has been on my mind that the Orioles really need one more reliable reliever in the mix, because I don't think Danny Coulombe is as high up on the trust tree as Yennier Cano. I don't think that because he keeps getting pulled after exactly three batters if he has any kind of difficulty at all, or even sometimes if he doesn't. Coulombe, he has not faced more than three batters since April the 3rd. So that was a lot of outings, and the Orioles are just treating him like They bring him in when he's going to face two out of three lefties, and then they get him out of there as soon as he faces the minimum three batters. So I don't know how much that means he is can be counted as one of the reliable seventh, eighth, ninth inning mix guys. Yennier Cano, although he's not looking like April and May that made him an all-star last year, he is looking like he did last year overall, which was still pretty good in the aggregate. So I think the Orioles are going to need one more guy in any case, so they don't have to use this trio in every would-be win. Maybe it would be even better to have two more guys so that Colom doesn't have to be part of the trio at all, and then they can have a trio they use a lot, and then a fourth guy who it's not going to hurt if you put him in the mix if, say, Cano or Kimbrel has pitched 2 days in a row, or they've pitched two out of three and they want to give those guys an extra day of rest or whatever. I think the Orioles were really going into the season hoping that one of Mike Bauman, Dylan Tate, and Jacob Webb would step up in this role. And I think for May and June, probably whether they're able to find another reliable guy is going to be if one of those guys can do it. Now, Bauman, I don't know why he's still here. I don't think he's going to do it. He's got a 5.06 ERA. He's walked 5.1 batters per nine innings. He's just having hittable stuff. He's allowed over 11 hits per nine innings. He's out of options. It just seems like he's got to be on the way out as Kyle Bradish and John Means return, right? That's what I think, but who knows? Mike Elias is weird about holding on to guys he doesn't want to put on waivers sometimes. It's true, Bauman has potential, but if he's not realizing the potential, the Orioles are not in a position where they can wait for him anymore, I don't think. So, I don't know. We'll see, maybe within 48 hours, what happens with Bauman. Maybe more like 96 hours, because really the first guy out's probably got to be Johan Ramirez, right? Whenever they activate Bradish or Means, and really probably when if they call up Nick Vespi or Bruce Zimmerman or something today, because it seems like they need someone who can give them length in the bullpen tonight, just in case either Grayson Rodriguez tonight or Dean Kramer tomorrow runs into some problems. I don't know. But moving on to Dylan Tate, a 2.84 ERA after pitching in Sunday's game, though he has a 4.90 fielding independent pitching. That number is so much higher because Tate has only struck out six batters in 12.2 innings. I will agree with the FIP number in that I don't think Tate is going to continue having an ERA under three if he continues to strike out roughly one batter every other inning. Not going to last. So I don't know. Don't know how much that's going to make him a candidate for trusted, seventh inning sometimes reliever. Jacob Webb, maybe. I mean, he has a 2.25 ERA now, a whip of exactly one after his one-third of an inning on Sunday. We remember him poorly because he is the guy who gave up two postseason homers last year in the span of three games, including the grand slam that he gave up after coming in relief of Brian Baker after Baker walked the bases loaded. So on Sunday, you know, what if Webb had been able to finish the seventh and then go on to pitch the eighth inning in relief of Colom after Colom was gave up a home run and was pulled after two-thirds of an inning, and then Cano gets the save? Or, you know, on Friday, you could have maybe had Tate or Webb for the eighth inning, and Cano gets the save chance in the ninth. Then you've got some extra rest for Kimbrel. I don't know if either one of these games ends up going better in those scenarios, but with the way Friday and Sunday did play out, you know, we all got to wonder. We all got to second guess about that because we cannot know what might have happened, but we do know what did happen, and what did happen stunk. So I think that it's fair to say there were some other possibilities that might have gone better, and I really hope that the Orioles end up considering some of those other possibilities down the road. And I don't think we should spare some criticism of Mike Elias for not adding another external relief option beyond Kimbrel. Now, it's true, there were some early bust-looking big relief signings handed out in the last offseason. For instance, Maryland's Josh Hader, $92 million contract, really bad for the Astros so far this season. Robert Stevenson had been with the Rays, signed with the Angels, $33 million. He's hurt. Wandy Peralta, $16 million, signed with the Padres. He's not good. Emilio Pagan, $16 million. Kind of mediocre results so far with the Reds. Some signings have worked. Atlanta got two guys. They signed reliever Reynaldo Lopez for $30 million. They've converted him into a starter. He's got an ERA under one so far. So that's a pretty great outcome for them. Joe Jimenez, also signed by Atlanta, $26 million contract over 2 years. Maybe it was three, I'm sorry. 2.45 ERA, a sub-1 whip so far. And then you've got the defending champion Texas Rangers. They signed an old guy duo to bolster their bullpen. They got David Robertson, 39 years old, for $11.5 million. So far, he's got a 1.17 ERA with an over 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. So more than one strikeout per inning. They've also got, as their closer, Kirby Yates, who's 37 years old, a $4.5 million contract. He still has a 0 ERA in the season. So, yeah, you know, maybe the Orioles should have signed one of these guys. Maybe they didn't want to risk over multiple years, so you could have looked for 1 year. Now, there were some bad one-year deals, but there were some good ones out there, too, probably that would have been better than having Bauman or Ramirez in your bullpen. I don't know. But I don't know. It's hard to wonder about this stuff because we don't really know what the money situation was over the last offseason under the thumb of John Angelos. Maybe another $10 million, $12 million on another one of these relievers may have been too much. The ones I've named who've worked out, they do not look like they were signed thinking they had to be the closer. So the Orioles maybe could have signed these guys, enticed them as eighth inning guys. But it seems like Elias needed to get another bullpen arm from somewhere. If it wasn't a free agent, maybe he should have used some of the excess prospects to get a guy with two, maybe 3 years of control and a pretty good track record. He didn't do that. We can't know why. Maybe he was clinging too tightly to the prospects. Maybe he didn't really like any of the relievers who are available. But it doesn't look good now after the last few days with Kimbrel. And really, whatever, if Kimbrel ends up not being in the mix for games here and there, if he's about to go on the injured list, I don't know. But we're just going to have to hope that the Orioles can hold it together probably until July, when presumably non-contenders are going to start putting arms on the market. But I got to say, having looked at the bullpens of most of the worst teams so far this year, one reason those teams are really bad and still have like single-digit wins, which is the Marlins, White Sox, Rockies, and even Astros, weirdly, it's because they don't have very many good relievers. The Astros, a little bit better, but Hader's certainly not working out. The others, not so much. So maybe it's going to be more of a close to mediocre team that starts trading relievers in July. I don't know. For me, maybe the most interesting possible trade reunion, if the Orioles are now, I'm just going to say, I don't think that Angelos wanted the Orioles to make any deals with the Nationals when he was still in charge. But Angelos is gone. Maybe David Rubenstein won't care about that. And a reunion with Hunter Harvey, who is a free agent after 2025. That looks interesting to me because he's ended up being pretty healthy and not too shabby with the Washington Nationals so far this year. Harvey, in fact, entered Sunday. ERA of 3.46 could be improved upon, but he has a 0.70 FIP. That's because he struck out 19 batters in 13 innings, which that'll do. That'll do. He's only walked two guys, so a 9.5 strikeout per walk ratio. It'll work. Is Elias going to want to do anything like that? I don't know. But back to James's question, I'm not throwing Suarez right into the ninth inning. Maybe it would be worth trying him out, say, as the seventh inning guy. I don't know. I don't know how that stuff is going to play in that kind of role. I do think it's worth a shot. I'm not keeping him in the bullpen as Radish returns. Maybe not when Means returns either. I would rather see him in the bullpen than Bauman or Ramirez right now. I think the Orioles, they're going to need to experiment on the fly more than we like. That's the result of their offseason choices. And, you know, wearing Kimbrel down doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help him. It doesn't help the Orioles. And if Colom is more of a specialist, yeah, somebody needs to step up. I don't know if it's Suarez, Keegan Aiken, Dylan Tate, Jacob Webb, whoever, somebody's going to have to do it. Or the Orioles are going to have to find somebody from outside who's going to do it. I don't know. So, James, there you go. I just hope things get better, right? As we all do. That's all that I've got for today. If you've enjoyed this show, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Maybe tell an Orioles fan friend that you know about the show as well. Thank you, everyone, for listening and subscribing. I will be back on this year's regular schedule on Friday morning to talk about whatever has happened in Birdland between now and then. Maybe some fun games against the Yankees. Maybe some not so fun ones. We're going to find out. Good Morning Birdland is a Camden Cast production on the Fans First Sports Network. This is Mark Brown signing off.